Heck Should I Feed My Cat? Part 4, The Basics. Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is your host and animal nutrition wizard, Trinity. I also run the Facebook group, Ask the Wizard, where I provide advice and I give helpful nutrition guides for free. I also have a Patreon page where you can support me and get access to my exclusive Discord and cool merchandise. I also now now provide food analyses and nutrition consults for a fee, while everything else I do is still free and accessible to the public. So this is part 4 of how to feed a cat, specifically how to feed a cat a healthy diet. And since it's been a little while since I went over them, I'm going to go over my 5 rules for feeding a cat. Rule number 1, feed a diet high in moisture. Rule number 2, feed a diet high in named animal protein. Rule number 3, feed a diet very low in carbohydrate. Rule number 4 is to feed a diet that has little to no heating and processing. And rule number 5 is feed a diet that has little to no synthetic additives or other unsafe ingredients. So I've already gone over the importance of moisture content and carbohydrate percentage, as well as what to look for when it comes to protein. And so today we'll be going over rule number 4, which is feed a diet that has little to no heating and processing. And for those kitty owners who give their cats dry commercial diets, this may be new territory. And I understand that many pet owners are not comfortable feeding raw at the time of listening to this podcast, and that's okay. I want to meet you where you're at, and I'm not here to push raw. What I am here to do is to provide evidence-based, scientifically proven information, because it's not always that easy to find or to dissect, and I'm here to help you make the best decisions you can and with whatever situation you currently find yourself in with your pet. My only ask is to just allow yourself to enjoy learning about new and potentially surprising information and to always do the best you can for your pets. That's really the most important thing. It's important to keep in mind that we are all at different places in our lives with different perspectives and different budgets, and sometimes it just takes a little understanding and some safe, comfortable ways to hear other ideas and learn new facts for someone to come around to the idea of looking deeper into their pet's food and what's really in the container of food they're feeding their dog or cat and how it gets made, the processes and standards that are really in place, and so on. Sometimes it takes some sort of a life-changing traumatic event with your pet, and it's very unfortunate when that happens. But that's the way many people do come around to looking into what's really in their pet food. Hopefully, you can get there without that happening, and that's why I do what I do. So for today's episode, I'm going to go over some of the concerns with feeding a highly processed, cooked, and/or rendered diet. And then just help you start getting comfortable with feeding a lower processed food, and it doesn't necessarily have to be raw. So what can happen to foods when cooked that makes processed diets like kibble such a problem? We'll start by looking at the most obvious choice, which is meat. Meat proteins are of a much higher biologic value than plant proteins, mainly because they're more digestible, but also because they offer a much wider selection of amino acids. So this is going to be very important to keep in mind as we go through this episode and how it pertains to your pet and their eating of this meat. So as we've talked about, animal protein and its smaller units of amino acids are very important for a cat. They're important for us too, but they're especially important for a cat. And when you eat food that has protein in it, whether it's coming from a plant or an animal source, your body immediately starts working on breaking it into smaller units called amino acids. And amino acids are vital and necessary for all living cells. They regulate metabolism and tissue growth and repair, among other things. A lack of amino acids in the diet negatively impacts all of the organs in the body, potentially leading to heart conditions and muscle depletion, immune system issues, and it can cause leaky gut syndrome and a whole slew of other health problems. There are essentially 22 amino acids that we're aware of, and they are the building blocks of protein. A protein molecule is really just a chain of amino acids, and they're all held together by peptide bonds. And these chains are folded into different three-dimensional shapes, and what shape they take depends on their individual function. In order for cats to survive on any diet, it must contain, at the absolute minimum, 11 essential amino acids out of these 22. Essential amino acids are amino acids that cannot be synthesized in the body and therefore absolutely must be included in the diet. It's still best to have all 22 amino acids in the diet, but there's 11 that absolutely have to be in order to sustain life. For a cat, these are arginine, histidine, isoleucine, leucine, lysine, methionine, phenylalanine, threonine, tryptophan, valine, and taurine. That last one is one you've probably heard of before. There are also a number of other amino acids, as I said, that should be included in the diet as much as possible, but should a diet be lacking them for some reason, the cat can usually synthesize them inside its own body from other amino acids. And this is why it's still a good idea to ensure your cat's diet has the complete array of amino acids in their diet, because manufacturing the non-essential amino acids actually requires the breakdown of the essential amino acids, meaning more essential amino acids must then be provided in order to make up for the lack of non-essential ones, which is eventually going to cause an issue. The best way I've ever heard it put is that it's akin to refusing to spend money on firewood because you can just burn your table and chairs. Okay, well, great, but now you're out of dining room furniture. So how does all of this pertain to cooking meat? Let's set aside the fact that we're here to talk about specifically cat food for a moment and just talk about the effects that heating and processing has on food in general. Just kind of the basics. First of all, digestibility is the measure of how much any particular nutrient is actually available to the animal consuming it. If a food is not digestible, in most cases it's considered low quality and not very nutritious or even unhealthy, the exception really being fiber. Digestibility of meat relies on the digestive tract of the animal eating it, or digestive system, and on the quality of the protein. So for proteins, that quality relies on the availability and arrangement of its amino acids. And when meat is cooked, the digestibility of its protein quickly begins to go down, because the amino acids that make up the protein become denatured. This is important, and we're going to dig into that a little bit right now. Rendering or processing food at high temperatures cause nutrient loss, and the higher the heat, the greater the loss. Extrusion is done at very high temperatures. This is how all of kibble is made, with the exception of baked and air-dried kibbles. Heat will also denature proteins, which has been linked to inflammation and allergies. Often a dog that appears to have a chicken allergy in a kibble, for example, can eat human-grade chicken, such as like rotisserie chicken you might pick up from a grocery store, without any problem. And that's because the rotisserie chicken isn't highly processed and rendered. The body can recognize it. During the extrusion process, ingredients are ground, they're mixed up, they're heat treated, and this results in something called extrudate, which is then cut and dried afterwards and becomes kibble. Extrusion cooking often uses animal byproducts and human industry waste, which would otherwise need to be buried or burnt, so extrusion cuts expenses and waste way down. Extrusion cooking is therefore widely used to process and sterilize the large majority of feed for pets because it cuts down on costs. But during extrusion, food undergoes chemical and physical changes that alter the physical and nutritional quality of the food. The chains of amino acids, which in their natural state form a helix basically as a result of their hydrogen bonds and their hydrophilic or water-liking and hydrophobic or water-repelling sides, they undergo structural changes when they're exposed to heat. What happens is the protein begins to unfold and the hydrophobic portion, which is supposed to be on the inside of the chain, becomes exposed and are moved to the outside of the molecule. So as heating continues, the water then sticks to the hydrophilic portions. The hydrophobic portions then dissolve, and this causes the protein molecule to lose its organization, become twisted and untwisted into random shapes, essentially, with water molecules trapped inside. And this process is completely irreversible. Think of an egg white. When you're cooking it, it changes from clear to a solid white. This is denaturation at work. The protein molecules form a solid gel because the water molecules get trapped inside. Studies show that this denaturation process reduces the levels of amino acids in the food and significantly reduces its nutritional value. Heat-sensitive vitamins are also destroyed, and the protein molecules essentially turn into something the body doesn't recognize and has a hard time extracting the amino acids from. And that's what causes a lot of allergies and why so many people deduce that their dog must be allergic to chicken. It's really the cooked, rendered, denatured form of chicken that their dog is having an issue with. This is also known as the Maillard reaction. It's the same thing that happens when you brown your meat when you're making a steak. Another study has showed that the most affected amino acid, which is lysine, which some of you may have found you need to supplement your cats with to help with respiratory issues, is so drastically affected by extrusion that this is often the most common free amino acid added back into processed commercial pet foods. It is virtually completely destroyed during extrusion and rendering, so manufacturers must add back in a synthetic version to meet minimum requirements for this nutrient. Other commonly affected amino acids you may see being added back into the food are cysteine, methionine, arginine, and tryptophan. So your cat's vital proteins or amino acids in their foods are damaged during extrusion, and manufacturers must add back in synthetic versions of all the amino acids as well as vitamins and minerals that they cooked out of the food. Unfortunately, these synthetic nutrients do not work as well or the same as the natural nutrients do, and they do not come along with all of their many natural cofactors and coenzymes to ensure the best digestibility and biological use of these nutrients. So denatured proteins, as I mentioned before, also trigger food allergies or sensitivities in many pets because the immune system often cannot recognize the altered protein, and it will be treated as a foreign invader. This is why a dog or cat, like I said, might be able to eat the chicken off your plate, but have a bad reaction to chicken-based kibble. Could be one of those many reasons. There are other concerns with heating and processing, and that is the unwanted byproducts in the final product, which is your pet's food. Heterocyclic amines, or HCAs, can be formed during the heating of meat and fish, and these are carcinogenic and mutagenic chemicals that are formed from cooking muscle meats when the amino acids react with creatine at high temperatures. 17 different HCAs resulting from the cooking of muscle meats have been identified as cancer risks. A 2003 study sampled 25 pet foods, and they found that all but one of them contained some form of carcinogen. Of those 24 samples, 13 of them contained HCAs. Even more concerning, a researcher in 2012 found that 14 out of every 16 dogs, or roughly 85% of the dogs tested positive for the presence of HCAs in their hair. And meat isn't the only food that we need to worry about when it comes to heating and processing. Acrylamides are also a big concern with starchy processed foods. Acrylamides form when starch is heated, causing a chemical reaction between certain sugars and the amino acid asparagine, which the U.S. National Toxicology Program has classified as reasonably anticipated to be a human carcinogen. The EPA actually classifies acrylamide as likely to be carcinogenic to humans. They can form in starchy foods when they're cooked at temperatures above 250 degrees Fahrenheit. The higher the temperature and the longer the food is cooked, the more acrylamide that will form. Ingredients shown to have higher levels of acrylamides include grains, potatoes, and dried fruits. The FDA provides advice on how one can lower their acrylamide exposure by lessening the cooking times in certain foods. One example they gave was to toast bread to a light brown color rather than a dark brown color and avoid very brown areas. Sorry, burnt toast lovers. I am not looking to ruin your breakfast. But pet owners can't simply avoid the very brown areas in commercial dry pet foods. The whole thing is a very brown area due to the cooking and rendering the ingredients go through. So our best bet is, whenever possible, to avoid kibble altogether. All in all, not only does feeding your pet a highly processed, cooked food not guarantee any level of safety with that food, it can actually lower the quality of the ingredients within, destroy vital nutrients and beneficial bacteria, and create toxic byproducts. And in fact, while the heat used in rendering and extruding will kill any pathogens, it won't necessarily reduce the amount of antibiotics, drugs, or other toxins that are often found in meats from factory farms. The rendering industry has also admitted that meat wrappers can sometimes be mixed in from discarded grocery store meats, which is one reason why sometimes a pet owner will find a piece of plastic in their pet foods. And of course, the fact that all pathogens are killed means that the good ones are killed too, and you need to be replenishing your microbiome as much as possible. So for pets that are eating a dry food and not getting a source of probiotics, this can lead to a lot of digestive issues. So what if you're not ready for raw? What if all this concerns you, but right now feeding a completely uncooked diet is just not in the cards? Well, there are other options and changes that you can make to your cat's diet or your dog's diet, for you dog owners out there listening, that will greatly impact the level of, or will greatly reduce the level of processing and heat your pet's food has gone through and positively impact their health. So you can do baked kibble. It's often very expensive, but baked kibbles are often better options than extruded kibbles. Studies done in the Netherlands show that temperatures lower than our typical American extrusion temps have far less effects on amino acids and overall protein quality. You can do air-dried kibbles. I would recommend those to the extruded or baked kibbles. They are minimally processed and use a cool-drying process, so they aren't exposed to the same kind of heat. You can also feed canned food. While there is still a lot of rendering and processing in canned foods, they often have very few starches comparatively, so less risk of acrylamides, and they're often cooked at lower temperatures for shorter periods of time. They don't need to have the same level of processing that an extruded food goes through, so you can also reduce somewhat the denatured proteins. You can also feed dehydrated. Just be sure to look at the carb content. Large levels of carbohydrate often hide in dehydrated foods. You can also feed freeze-dried raw. It's still raw, but it is shelf-stable and does go through some processing, so some people do feel more comfortable with it, and it uses no heating at all. So you actually maintain up in the high 90s in percentage of the nutrients within the food. Digestibility studies between freeze-dried food and frozen raw food show that the digestibility is the same. And if you're feeding all canned, air-dried, dehydrated, and you're finding that's just not within your budget, you can also simply just make it part of the diet, switching to half of the diet being less processed, or one-third. Make maybe 3 or 4 meals a week canned. Make 4 meals a week air-dried kibble. Even swapping a portion of the food each day for a bit of less processed food can have a huge positive effect on your cat's health. And a bonus part is, because they are likely to start feeling better and becoming more healthy, you are likely to save money on vet bills and actually have more of a budget for a less processed diet for your cat. Often pet owners who switch to fresher, more pure foods experience less health problems with their pets. Cats will have less hairballs, less kidney and bladder issues, healthier skin and coat, less dandruff and shedding, better breath, less stinky poo, that's always nice, and other improvements. This is because they're giving their pets the building blocks their bodies need to function properly. And that will cover part 4 of how to feed your cat, the basics. And for some of you, this may be feeling like more than just some basics that we're getting into, but I think that it's important to provide you with some of the terms, terminology, tools, and information that you need in order to look into this better, be able to make better decisions about what kind of food you want to feed, or at least have that knowledge so that you can look into it when you feel ready to. So this is a wrap for this current episode. I'll try to come out with the final part of the series relatively soon, and then I may sneak in another mini episode. I've already done bunnies, so at some point I may do a different pet, like guinea pigs, for example. So keep an eye out, or I guess an ear out, for the next episode. Please go check out my Facebook page if you haven't already. I'm almost up to 100 members. I think I'm about 2 members away from 100, so we're gonna have a little celebration of some sort, I'm sure. And I've also got a couple other things in the works. I'm working to create my website. Been working on that for a while. So at some point that will come out, and I've had a lot of help from one of my new friends who's an amazing designer and overall just amazing person. Her name is Ruby, so shout out to Ruby. And I also am working on creating more guides and, of course, more podcasts. So look forward to teaching and learning more together, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your whatever you're doing. All right, have a good one. And guys, don't forget, nutrition is magic.
Hey, listener, I'd like to tell you a bit about the Animal Nutrition Wizard. She is an independent pet nutrition coach and the host of this podcast, Trinity Thresher. She currently has certifications from Nina Liu and Holly and Hugo, 6 years of experience in the field, and does independent study and research. She provides coaching, consultations, guides, and more through donations only, whereas the average cost for a pet nutrition consultation ranges from $75 to $500. The ultimate goal is to create a nonprofit organization that provides these benefits on a larger scale, and to create a certification program for the Animal Nutrition Wizard's seal of approval for members of the pet food industry to strive to achieve. This seal would let pet owners know that products using it are safe and healthy. Your support is the driving force that helps to maintain and grow this dream. Thank you.